Peter B. Collins with News and Comment here on Friday, March 30th. This land is your land. The Bill of Rights is yours, except when the FBI disagrees.
As I was walking a ribbon of highway, I saw above me and in the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.
Wired Magazine broke a story following on conversations with Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, the number two Democrat in the Senate, and it turns out that FBI agents who were being trained for counterterrorism were told that, quote, under certain circumstances, the FBI has the ability to bend or suspend the law and impinge on freedoms of others. Now, this appears to come from a PowerPoint slide. And despite the efforts of the writer at Wired Magazine to discover the date and the actual use of this particular statement, the FBI is not so forthcoming. In fact, it was difficult to get them to release just this one-page item. But it really is frightening to think that government officials were training FBI agents into, that Constitution thing, the law thing. All you got to do is say you're working on a terrorism case, and that trumps everything. For example, it goes into more detail. The FBI has the ability to gather information on individuals which would normally be protected under the U.S. Constitution through the use of FISA. Yes, FISA, the law that Barack Obama said that he would never vote for, and he also said he opposed the telecom immunity in the FISA reforms of August 2008. But he went ahead and voted for that. And so this is just another indication of how things have gone terribly wrong in a country that we believe, or believed, is or was governed by a contract with the people called the Constitution. And it shows the sheer arrogance of runaway law enforcement agencies who were given green lights by the Bush administration and greener lights by the Obama administration to violate our rights as they see fit. No accountability. No way for a citizen to appeal an arbitrary determination by an FBI agent. And this drives the violation of our rights using the Patriot Act's national security letters. And the FBI's own inspector general has revealed widespread abuse of national security letters. Where are the Democrats who opposed George W. Bush's expansions of executive authority and the police state operations? Many of them have gone silent because it's their president who is responsible now for these agencies and the policies that they use. A glimmer of good news from the Republicans in Washington. There are at least some who want to repeal or nullify the portion of the National Defense Authorization Act called the Homeland Battlefield Bill that I have been ranting and raving about since early December. The president signed it into law on December 31st with a signing statement that said that he opposed the provision that allowed the indefinite detention without charge or trial of an American citizen. And to boot, that detention could be on a military base. He said he'll never use that power. But I am pleased to see a report from the International Business Times, ibtimes.com, that a Republican member of the House from Michigan, described as a Tea Party affiliate, I have not heard of him before, Representative Justin Amash. He told the Associated Press, "I intend to put as much political pressure on this issue as possible. I intend to spend a lot of time, and I already have, making the public aware of this issue, so that we can get the change we need to address it." And according to this article, the opposition comes from Tea Party-affiliated House members. Well, it's about frickin' time. These Tea Party people claimed that they were going to shrink government and to roll back the excesses. And I give Senator Rand Paul and a few others credit for opposing the 4-year extension of the Patriot Act last year. But by and large, we have not found these Tea Party Republicans interested, in the true constitutional issues of our time. The concern is bipartisan. Adam Smith, the top Democrat in the House Armed Services Committee, has also pressed for changes. And as I've pointed out, my senior senator from California, a highly conservative Democrat, Dianne Feinstein, who chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee and who has supported most of the police state activities that have occurred since 9/11, even she finds the NDAA extreme and goes too far. And she has sponsored a bill that has many Republican co-sponsors to make very clear, a clarifying language, that the bill, the details of the NDAA, could not be used against an American citizen residing in the United States. I'd love to see it go farther, but that's a good start, and I hope that some of the Tea Party folks will rally around the bill as Senator Feinstein moves it forward. In the United States Senate this week on Thursday, there was an effort to roll back the tax breaks for big oil, and it failed on a 51-47 vote. In a moment, we'll name the Democrats who voted to defeat this bill, which is just a small step toward tax fairness in this country and taking away the giveaways and the big breaks that big oil enjoys. And of course, when you attack these things, Grover Norquist and the real right-wing no-tax, low-tax gang says, oh, that's a tax increase. No, this is an effort to take away a tax break for an industry that doesn't need it. So, who joined the Republicans in defeating the bill? Senator Mary Landrieu, a nominal Democrat from Louisiana. Ben Nelson, who's retiring, Senator from Nebraska. Don't let that door hit you on the way out, Ben. Mark Begich, Democrat from Alaska, and Jim Webb, the Democrat from Virginia who is leaving the Senate after one term this year, and he's been a great disappointment. He did oppose the war in Iraq. He was has a military background, and I've met him a couple of times, and I've just been so disappointed in how conservative he turned out to be. But if you want to know why senators vote the way they do, the 47 senators who voted against this bill have received a total of almost $23.5 million in career contributions from oil and gas. Those who voted to repeal the tax breaks for big oil have received a mere $5.8 million, which is about one quarter of the amount that the oil-breathing senators have received. And so it's just very clear. Senate Republicans have voted seven times since 2011 in favor of the interests of big oil. And that's why we don't have a meaningful energy policy. It's another reason why we have deficits. And, you know, they want to raise taxes on little people like you and me and let the oil companies continue their greedy binge of profits without accountability and without taxes. Speaking of which, ExxonMobil made $41 billion in profit last year. And while that was an increase of 35% over the previous year, its estimated effective tax rate actually went down. That's right. Profits up 35%, tax rate down. In 2010, Exxon paid only 17.6% in taxes. And on the past year, 2011, they're projected to be paying only 13% in taxes. In 2009, they paid zero in taxes. And this is just another example of how we don't have tax fairness, how corporations and wealthy individuals have shifted the burden to working people and working families, and they continue to use their power to skew things in their favor. Apple Computer is once again claiming that working conditions at its factories in China, through the subcontractor Foxconn and others, are actually improving. And a recent report from an interesting group that monitors these situations called the Fair Labor Association, which Apple recently joined, shows that there's still a lot of work to do. Now, under Chinese law, the maximum you're allowed to work per week is 49 hours. The average maximum weekly hours at the three giant Chinese factories owned by Foxconn, 61.1 hours. So people are overworked and they're hugely underpaid. Foxconn workers start at about $285 per month, and the average wages are about $450 a month. Now, I realize we can't really relate that to the cost of living in China, but however you slice it, those are low wages. And Foxconn has assured Apple that over the next year that it will reduce overtime and worker schedules to the 49-hour per week level, and that despite cutting hours, employees' pay will not decline, which means that the hourly rates will go up. So I think we need to keep the pressure on. But we are seeing improvements here, where Apple has actually named all of its suppliers. Apple has shown some interest in improving the working conditions of the people who make the very popular products that we use here in America and, in fact, around the world. And I just think we need to keep the pressure on and use Apple's huge profits, even bigger than Exxon, to shame them, force them, and use all available means to get them to improve those conditions. It's in our interest, and it's in the interests of really all Chinese people. And it could have the effect of lifting the entire boat, if you will, if we can create a rising tide situation. I've previously told you about Hussein Haqqani. Before he became Pakistan's ambassador to the United States, I had several interviews with him back around 2005, 6, and 7. I remember one time he called on his cell phone and said, "Gosh, I'm really sorry. It's hard to do the interview. I came home and I'm locked out of my house." I remember that vividly. Well, Hussein Haqqani is in a pickle, and he's very worried that he might get killed. The pickle is that he is accused of being the author of a secret memo from the Zardari government in Pakistan to the Obama administration about the possibility of a military coup, and this was dated last summer. Summer of 2011. This is now the subject of an investigation by the Supreme Court of Pakistan, and they have asked Haqqani to come back to Pakistan to provide further testimony, and he's saying that it is too risky. Quote, "Every day I receive messages on Twitter, telephone, and email that I will be killed the day I set foot in Pakistan. Several websites connected to jihadi groups as well as individuals and organizations connected to a covert institution of state have called me a traitor." Now, I infer, but I don't know, that that is a reference to the ISI, the inter-services agency that is the equivalent of our CIA. And Haqqani says that the powerful former head of the ISI, General Pasha, was the one who implicated Hussein Haqqani as the author of this memo. So I care about Hussein Haqqani. In my conversations with him, I found him to be very honest and forthcoming. After he became ambassador, that changed, but ambassadors are paid to lie. That's what diplomacy is all about. So I was never offended by that because I didn't have the same expectations. More information on the extent of the damage at Fukushima's reactor number 2 at the Daiichi installation there. As you know, it was hit by the earthquake and tsunami over a year ago. And I mentioned this earlier this week in our news and comment, that number 2 really is in a stage of meltdown. And based on robotic assessment, we have more information. Cooling water in the containment vessel of Unit 2 has just 2 feet of depth, and it should be 33. That's the level estimated by the officials of TEPCO, who operate the plant, back in December. Now, we don't know how long the water level has been reduced to only 2 feet, but this is very scary because it means that the reactor core is exposed, what, all but 2 feet of it. And that can lead to the release of radioactivity. They've been pouring water in there. The containment vessel, I guess, is pretty clearly leaking. And we don't know how dangerous that water is as it leaches into the ground and perhaps flows into the sea at this seaside installation. The internal investigation also found current radiation levels of 72 sieverts inside the containment vessel, enough to kill a person in a matter of minutes. So these high levels of radiation are a real complicating factor, and we need to keep attention on Fukushima, as once again the Obama administration is turning a blind eye and authorizing the construction of new nuclear power plants in the United States without learning any lessons, without taking any new sets of precautions or changing technical design based on the failures in Japan. You may have heard that the bee population, not Peter Bee, but honeybees, has been ravaged in recent years, and scientists have been puzzled. There was one theory that cell phone radiation might have been affecting bees and their ability to create honey and do their jobs. Well, scientists now suspect that pesticides are playing a part, and they're doing more investigation here. Pesticides described here as only one of several likely factors that scientists have linked to declining bee populations. They say there are fewer flowers around the world, for example, due to land development, and that bees are being taken out by mites, viruses, fungi, and other pathogens. But I think that the pesticide issue and the as a suspect here is one that we need to follow up very carefully. It certainly seems sensible, and I say that, frankly, without having reviewed any of the scientific reports, but it does seem to be a likely factor given the widespread use of powerful pesticides in American agriculture. New study shows that the number of children being diagnosed with autism increased by more than 20% in a study on the period of 2006 to 2008. Now, it's estimated that one child in 88 received a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorders by the age of 8. And that has declined. Just 2 years ago, it was 1 in 110. Back in 2002, it was 1 in 155. So the increased frequency is something that we are seeing play out on an anecdotal basis. I certainly hear more about parents of children with autism and more attention paid to this very serious and crippling condition. And it'll be interesting to see over time how we respond to this and if there are, like the impacts on honeybees, environmental factors, human behavior contributing to the increase in the diagnoses of autism spectrum disorder. And finally today, I've done some interesting experiments. When I'm on the phone with somebody, I say, hey, log on to the webpage that I'm looking at and tell me what ads are being served up for you. And invariably, we're looking at the exact same webpage, but the ads are different. Why? Because of cookies and because of the ability to track our web activities and how we use our computers. Now, there are talks to try to tighten up our privacy protection and to allow us to opt out of being tracked. But the internet companies, and obviously Google and Facebook are the leaders here, they are resisting transparency when it comes to discussions of do not track policies. And at the Federal Trade Commission, the chair, John Leibowitz, says that he takes it pretty literally. If a consumer says do not track, it means absolutely do not track. And the web companies are looking for loopholes, looking for ways to collect that information, and they want to keep the policies and the discussions of any reform of these policies secret. And they claim that, well, it's for competitive reasons. If Google reveals all of its practices on how they track people and gather our information, then Facebook or search competitors like Yahoo might gain unfair advantage. Well, I don't buy that. Consumers come first. Our privacy is the baseline of these discussions. And I think this will be another interesting process over time. And Americans are so passive. I mean, what do we have? It seems like everybody is on Facebook because Facebook has 500 million users. Now, I know that's worldwide, but people are just so unaware and apparently unconcerned, oblivious to the way our information is collected and used. And if you've ever been on the other side of the equation where you have bought search words or Google AdWords, you know how carefully you can target your ad so it only appears when people who you think are most likely to be interested in that message will be seeing it. And on the one hand, you can say, that's really cool. If I'm selling cold water, I don't have to put it in front of people who like hot water. That's a silly example, but you know what I mean. But when they're able to find out what our other interests are, who likes sports, who likes gambling, who likes sex on the internet, well, it becomes very uncomfortable that they are collecting all that data and then serving it up to people who pay to use it to persuade, manipulate, or otherwise communicate. That's the latest from here at peterbcollins.com. Thanks for listening, and try not to track me, okay? I'll talk to you again soon, and drop by at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.